I'm Frank Vaughn. It's Sunday, April 26, 2026, and I couldn't resist coming at you today. I know I said I was going to take the entire weekend off, but it's been quite the weekend, and I genuinely believe hostilities are about to resume. And I think things are bad enough as they are today. I hope and I pray that the war can somehow wrap itself up by tomorrow morning. But I just don't think it will, because the damage that's already baked in is massive, massive in scale. Now, before we get to some of the news that's popped up over the weekend, I just want to give everybody a reminder of how things have gone for the American Empire and various theaters of operation over the history of the empire. Vietnam was a nation that was 128,000 square miles and at the time had far fewer than the 102 million souls that it holds today. It's a jungle strip, which creates its own issues. It's not highly mountainous. It's a coastal region. Very easy to get air assets over. The more bombs were dropped on Vietnam than were dropped in the entirety of the Second World War. And 18 years, I think, is what Trump said. The United States was involved before they had to just get out and admit defeat. People sort of glossed that over. There's a lot of movies have been made about Vietnam, but few ever talk about the fact that it was a lost war. Then you have Iraq, 169,000 square miles with a 48 million population today, mostly desert plains, fertile Tigris-Euphrates Valley, some mountains in the north, but American allies were in those mountains during that conflict. The Kurds, before they were betrayed multiple times. So you can just kind of write those mountains off the map. And it was a difficult occupation, had a very high casualty rate. And in the end, the Iraqis still hate the United States. Their government relies on the United States to even have a semblance of function. And right now, you might as well say, instead of it being a proxy war, it's like the Iraqis are in the middle of a civil war because they don't support, the people do not support the United States in their endeavor in Iran. I should say the Israelis, with the help of the United States. They don't support it in any way at all. Iraq is held together by a thread called oil and oil revenue and the petrodollar, which is under threat. Iraq has already shuttered some of its production. And the longer the Gulf is shut down, which now Trump has proudly claimed ownership of the shutting down of the Strait of Hormuz. It's his blockade now. It's not Iran. The United States is choking off the global economy. It's just a weird flex, and we're going to get into that and why it's weird and where it leads. Afghanistan was 252,000 square miles, larger, 45 million population, a little less. Landlocked, rugged Hindu Kush mountains dominate some arid plateaus and plains where the United States actually did most of their fighting. And of course, didn't win that war either. And now we have Iran, 636,000 square miles, more than double the size of Afghanistan, almost four times the size of Iraq, with 93 million population, technologically advanced, firing some very capable ballistic missiles, doing massive amounts of damage to the United States. Now, don't take my word for it, even though you should have, because I was telling you this back in mid-March, that the Iranians were having great effect. And how did I know that? Because before Planet Labs stopped releasing satellite imagery, we got some. We could see the damage the Iranians were causing early in the war. We could see it with our own eyes. We could also see that even Al Jazeera was gaslighting us, saying that every single missile salvo that was fired was intercepted. Everything was intercepted. They would post pictures of burning storage tankers with black columns of smoke rising up into the air, and they would say, it's debris. It's debris. It was a successful interception. Every single thing. Didn't matter how much damage you seen with your own eyes. Didn't matter if a drone, you seen video of a drone striking a target directly. It was a successful interception. Wild stuff to witness, but we've been gaslit. And now, of course, 45 days later, the mainstream news, which they may be critical of the Trump administration. They may put on a good show, but in the end, they're all pretending that Iran is the bad guy. They're all united in this idea that Iran is somehow the aggressor, even though they've been aggressed with. And it has nothing to do with whether you support the government or not. I would highly recommend, and I don't know if I put it in a formal recommendation, you should go and watch some travel blogs that have been filmed over the last 10 years that are available on YouTube. Some of them are 3 hours long. We'll take you on a tour of Iran so that you can actually learn what Iran's all about, what it actually looks like. It's not quite the spin that you see in the media and online. People are hypnotized. They think it's all bag ladies dressed from head to toe in burqas. They think it's all backwards. I've seen several people that just allude to the fact that it's just a bunch of people who like to experience bestiality with camels. It's not, that's just, it couldn't be further from the truth. It's a highly sophisticated technological civilization with a military of 1 million men that is organized around guerrilla warfare principles, who have been studying the United States for decades, watching their wars and figuring out how to survive those wars. And survival equals winning for the Iranians. That's what we are not understanding. The headline on screen is, Iran caused more extensive damage to U.S. military bases than is publicly known. U.S. bases and equipment across the Middle East came under attack, including from an Iranian F-5. The F-5 was, I believe, combat effective or in combat duty for the first time in 1957 or 1959, including an F-5 despite American air defenses. Repairs could cost billions. The F-5 not only bombed the largest base in Kuwait, but it managed to successfully return back to Iranian airspace and land. What does that tell you about leaky air defenses? It certainly says something. And then I just want to dispense with this without, I don't need to show an article. Everybody talks about the girls' school in Manab, and they shrug off the fact that the U.S. did a double tap strike, which killed a bunch of little girls, which I can't shrug off. I'm not that soulless. It requires a great degree of soullessness and a lack of empathy and human decency to just shrug off the deaths of not just the 160-odd that died there, but the thousands of children that have been killed in these wars. I'm not capable of doing that. But I've heard it said, if the Iranians didn't want their kids to get killed, they shouldn't have put their schools so close to their military bases. Do you realize the United States does the exact same thing? Do you realize there's families that live on military bases and the schools are in proximity? You realize there's churches? Heck, you can see the pagan church on the Kuwaiti base from space. You can see the great big pentagram that's built right into the base. Civilian structures exist. The United States doesn't. It doesn't mean they're being used as human shields. It's a nod to the reality of military service. It doesn't excuse the war crime. The damage left, and I've told you this, and I'm not paying NBC for any of their so-called news, but I told you this mid-March, and I've been telling you this over and over again, that the Iranians were very effective. They left the bases uninhabitable. I used the words ruined on, or I described them as ruins on X, and one user took issue with that. But what do you call it when the military personnel can't live there? When they've been moved to hotels? You remember early in the war, the Iranians were sending drones and they were striking hotels across the Gulf regions. And the media was like, they're hitting civilian targets. They were hitting soldiers and servicemen that were stationed in those buildings, working remotely because they had to abandon their bases. The advanced radars were hit. That's why this ceasefire has seen so much redeployment of material. The United States is getting ready to really do it this time. They had to replace a lot of gear that was destroyed. And it will cost billions if they ever get repaired, because in the wake of this, what people, I think, need to understand is the headline on screen is Trump admin pitching U.S. companies to rebuild Gulf infrastructure hit by Iran. Arab officials say it's tone deaf. The Arabs, these GCC countries, paid $148 billion to the United States for security. They didn't get security. They got blown up. And so if you read, and this is via the Middle Eastern Eye, it doesn't, people, you know, they see Zero Hedge and they get upset, but it's like Zero Hedge is just an aggregator. They write some of their own news, but this is from the Middle Eastern Eye. And if you scroll down far enough in the article, I don't recall whereabouts it is, but it gives a figure somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 to $60 billion in damage that's been done to the GCC. And so Trump is trying to get the U.S. company, U.S. private companies, equity, to pick up the tab for repairing the Gulf. But think about that number, $50 to $60 billion in damage that's been done by the Iranians so far. As Trump has noted, there were 6 weeks of war, and there's been 2 weeks of so-called pseudo-ceasefire. It's not really a ceasefire. It's just a cessation. Think about the damage they could still do. They haven't hit the desalinization plants. Israel's very vulnerable that way. Their water supply is incredibly vulnerable to getting hit. That's why what little is left of U.S. anti-ballistic missile technology, their limited munitions, which they've already burned through, is being rapidly deployed to the Middle East, transport plane after transport plane after transport plane. They've ramped up their bombing presence and their refueling presence. If they go again, they're going to hit really hard. They're going to spend it all. And the U.S. is not going... Trump keeps saying that he has rebuilt the U.S. military. It's not quite true, but he certainly set it on a course to get there. But with all of the advanced munitions spent, there's going to be no way to prosecute a war in the future if it's necessary to, say, protect Taiwan or some other aspect of U.S. imperialism. And that's on top of the fact that a lot of munitions were redeployed to Ukraine in a fruitless endeavor there, in a war that needs to get wrapped up. Trump used to know this. This is the thing that kills me. He campaigned on the things that I'm saying. But now that I'm still saying those things, which I liked him saying, now that I'm still saying those things, I'm getting attacked as an anti-Trumper. I supported the things he said when he was trying to get elected. I don't support what he's doing now, which runs completely counter, regardless of what anybody says, to what it was he promised to deliver. Now, in terms of real-world consequences, I'm going to show you a picture right now. Well, I'm going to read this tweet first. Drought grips most of the continental United States. This is my words. Fields that should be seeded by now sit under the snow on the prairies. Fertilizer supplies are strained and choked off because of the war. Some serious supply issues are inevitable, not just higher prices, but megadeth. Now, megadeth, if you look it up, I may have misspelled it. I'm not sure. It's an actual technical term. Megadeth, memory serves, because when I wrote this, I was just going from memory. It quantifies a million deaths. And I think we're heading into tens of millions of people who will starve to death, not over years, but over the next 16 to 18 months, maybe less. That's what we're heading into. It's not just about higher prices for you. It's about the people who fall off the bottom rungs of the ladder. And it's not just Ma Nature that's doing this. The war is causing this problem. I'm going to show you a couple of pictures that we took ourselves. This is the scene out my window. Now, you can't really tell, but there's a snowbank there that's 2 feet deep. Seeding should be mostly done for a lot of people now. We're still trying to get rid of the snow. We're going to have snow until May. Now, I know it's only Saskatchewan, but with the rest of the United States under drought, with fertilizer not being delivered where it needs to get delivered in the old world, we're heading into a food crisis, and that's not hyperbole. That's fact. And I mean, you're seeing some of it manifest. People, another picture I took yesterday and I shared on social media was this one. I didn't actually take this one, but it was taken locally. It's the price of a box of Co-op Gold beef burgers. Don't let the gold label fool you. This is a pretty standard product. I'm not trying to bash it, but it's meat, it's wheat crumbs, it's thin patties. We're not talking about sirloin marketed, woo, souped up burger. It's a pretty standard thing. And the reason this price is important is just about every raffle or draw or contest that you're going to participate in a Saskatchewan small town is probably going to involve a box of Co-op Gold burgers being given away. This is something I've learned since I've got here. This is a staple. I don't necessarily buy it. I've certainly bought them in the past. It's pretty easy when you're planning a party. You just go get a box of burgers and you barbecue up the whole whack. Pretty great. But when I moved here in 22, these were $50 a box. It's 2026. This is the regular price. They're not on sale, but the sale price, last I saw, was still in the 70s. This tells you food inflation is crazy. A pound of coffee, I believe it's a pound. I'd have to look at the bag. The coffee that I buy, not expensive stuff, It's close to $30 a bag now. It's insane. To the point where, like, I'm cutting back on coffee. I used to drink it with abandon because it was cheap. Now I have one cup a day. I budget coffee because things are changing. We've been stranded in the house the last couple days because the driveway, as I reported in my last video, was completely destroyed. And then we fixed it, and then I tried to drive the van out of it and I ended up burying the van, swamped her good. And she was stuck. We worked really hard to free it the one day. I got it out and ended up burying it again because it was just a swamp and quagmire, and I had to wait for it to freeze. Thankfully, it froze. It went down to minus 10. It's the end of April. It went down to minus 10. I was finally able to get it out and get into town. But then we sat there at the kitchen table, and I was just reading the receipts. And I read them not to put pressure on my wife or what she buys or anything. I read them because the prices tell the tale of where we're headed. It's like reading the tea leaves. You can see the future and the price of your groceries. And you watch what comes in the door of the house for a family of four. You go out once a month or go out once every 3 weeks and you drop $1,000, and ain't that much that comes back in the door anymore. You know, we're not buying expensive stuff. We're buying raw ingredients, and we buy our meat locally. We buy it from a local farm to try and save costs. We harvest deer. We do the things that you do. And it's still expensive. People living in town don't have a lot of options. At any rate, this is coming, and you should prepare for it. Dry canning, putting stuff away. I mean, it's not just prices. It could also be availability. I cannot pretend to know every single region in Canada or in the United States how this might manifest. You might actually see shortages here. It might not just be limited to what's happening on the other side of the world. This is on top of the increase in gas prices. By the way, you know, I don't know if I've got this segment fully prepared yet. I'm just going to leave it with, there's over a billion barrels of oil that are now missing that should have been in the supply chain, delivered to their targets for manufacture and processing into 100, maybe 1,000 different things. That shortfall is already baked in. I think it's 1.4 billion barrels of oil that are missing. And so people are moving through their inventories, moving through, they're replacing it through releases of strategic petroleum reserves and inventory. But eventually that's going to run out if the strait doesn't open. In spite of what Trump says, this is another thing I've heard him say, is that he will double oil production in the United States. He can't. It will not happen. It is mythical. The United States cannot replace the varieties of oil that are lost or the demand. Sure, they can make a lot of money for the oil companies, but it isn't going to hurt the average American who's going to be stuck paying for it all. It's all bad news heading into November, and we'll get to that. We'll finish on that note. A lot of the damage is already baked in. It can only get worse. If hostilities resume, and I think they will, the third chapter of this conflict is going to be world-changing. I don't think that's an understatement at all. The next thing I want to read from Twitter that I wrote last night. Caroline Leavitt to Fox before the White House Correspondents' Dinner event. There will be some shots fired tonight. And I said it's hard to trust anything anymore. So a guy opens fire. From last I read, didn't hit anything. Fired at security. Survives. The video that we've been given shows I don't know how many guns drawn on this guy. He's been arrested. He's, you know, the standard story is he's a far-left lunatic. Went in there, shot the place up. I think everybody's reaction, you know, I've seen a lot of pictures of Melania Trump being shocked as military rushed into the room. I think, you know, something happened. I don't know all the details. But Trump goes on to do a press conference where he promotes the ballroom of the White House as necessary because of the shooting. I don't know. it just kind of leaves me scratching my head. Especially right now, Trump, this is from the tweet, Trump is setting up the conditions for the Great Reset and destroying the Republicans' midterm chances. Shooting him is just wrong, and it won't change a thing, because it will not. Everybody thinks that Trump is the anti-globalist. Maybe he thinks he's the anti-globalist. I've said on this channel how the elites in the United States appear to be battling with the elites in Europe, and I think that's at least part of the truth. However, if Trump is getting bad advice, and he is, the people who are whispering in his ear are telling him that the war in the Middle East is a good idea. And who are those people? They're the neocons, the same neocons that worked with those same European elites over the years in the Middle East and in various conflicts, the same who would fight Russia directly in Ukraine. They're the ones that have his ear. I've said before on the channel how Trump is expendable. Once he's done certain things and made certain commitments, he can go. And he will go back to Mar-a-Lago and continue to live his life and build his businesses, while everybody else will be left holding the bag. The third chapter of this war will create a crisis for the world, which is already, there's already a crisis here. Recessionary, depressionary. I don't know how deep it goes. The food crisis is real. The economic crisis is real. They've said, I've read articles where they estimate how long it will take to bring production in the Gulf back up to where it was pre-war. Right now, the price shock is largely hidden. The market is still treating, like everything's become crypto now. So when Trump comes out and says something, the market reacts. They act like it's truth, whatever he says. And it doesn't matter how many times it's revealed that he's lied. He's lied so much. He said, we're talking to the right people in Iran to get a deal done. We're going to have a deal. There's no deal. And then yesterday, just yesterday, he said, we're not going to fly to Pakistan to talk to nobodies. So you're either talking to the right people or you're talking to nobodies. He's having his cake and he's eating it too, and he's doing it every single day, and eventually the magic is going to wear off. And when it does, reality is going to set in. And when that does, prices are going to go up. That's already baked in. There's no avoiding that process. The only thing that can be avoided is the third chapter of this war, which will be the total chapter. May not go nuclear, but this is where everybody fires everything they have. They go all in, and it's going to break things in ways that will probably lead to the deaths of hundreds of millions of people around the world from famines and shortages. And that will create the conditions. Moving forward in time, as the crisis unfolds and we go through the summer, deal with the drought, deal with the late planting season, deal with the shortfalls, deal with the fact that yields are down because the fertilizer didn't get where it needs to go, deal with the fact the bread baskets of the world are on fire. When we deal with all that, we're coming into the fall, we're coming into the winter, and we see the consequences manifesting all around us. And Trump has to face the electorate in November. There's a very good chance he gets reined back in. There's a very good chance the Republicans get devastated. Even their own strategists are saying, we're going to get wrecked. We can't figure something out. His approval rating's in the tank, man. I'm not saying it because I like it. I don't like it. I'm just saying what is. It's bad news come November. So you move past November. The politics in the United States becomes consumed with turmoil and impeachment and all this nonsense that's going to happen. And meanwhile, the world unravels. And as the world unravels, MAGA goes away. And people who are starving to death are going to be looking for solutions. And the Great Reset is right there. It's right there. It's all ready. Nice little package. They've been talking about energy lockdowns. They've been building us consciously towards this. The situation in the Middle East creates the pretext for energy lockdowns, just but far more real. You see, with C-19, you had a virus that didn't have high lethality. In the end, it turned out it just wasn't that lethal for most of the people who got it. But they used that not just to lock people down, but to compel you to participate in a medical experiment. to give vaccine makers through Project Warp Speed, to give them somehow, people invert this and think that Trump is a hero for Warp Speed. I've been consistent in my criticism of that program back before there was even talk of developing the medical experiment. I brought vaccine experts on my channel, virologists who worked at the labs that were going to develop this thing, and they said, if there's anything rolled out in the next 2 to 3 years at a minimum, don't touch it because it ain't going to be good for you. And he gave them Warp Speed. He gave the makers total immunity from prosecution and brought it to the world. And in the United States, things might have been better, just like in Saskatchewan. Things were better here than they were in Ontario. But the passports came, and 80-odd percent of people lined up and participated. And that was with a very thin pretext. This time round, the energy lockdowns, you have a real pretext. You're going to have real shortages. You're going to have real demand destruction. I don't even think I finished my point. So you start ramping up oil production again. You get assuming the war ends tomorrow, the Strait of Hormuz opens up and everything starts to get back to normal. It's not like a switch. There's a lag, a multi-month lag before you get back up to normal production. And during that time, that 1.4 billion barrel shortfall that I was talking about, it keeps growing the entire time you're recovering. You don't start eating into that shortfall until months into the recovery. You have to create surpluses. So there's a price shock built in that's going to take place over the course of time. That's going to happen no matter what happens. War ends or not. But if the next chapter, if the next stage of the war goes through and the Middle East is literally left in ruins, like all the Iranians have to do is blow up the desalination plants, Dubai and Abu Dhabi, Qatar, it's over. It's over for all of them. It will never be the same again. It's the same with the Israelis. If you hit their desalination plants, you create a water shortage, things change in a way that cannot be easily fixed. And I believe that will happen as soon as American bombs start falling again. I think the next phase is total, and I think the damage will be orders of magnitude greater than what we're already destined to experience. And what we're already destined to experience is going to be bad enough. And like, I usually give you the caveat that I would be happy to be wrong. And I would be. But I just don't see how I'm wrong on this one. The math tells me we're already in deep trouble. All we can do is keep digging deeper or stop the digging and start climbing our way out of it. And the climb out is going to take a year or two at a bare minimum. So, I guess to summarize, I think that you should all take that seriously. I think you should all be looking for ways that you can get ready because you still have time. Lord have mercy, clearly, because we all still have time to get ready, whether that means relocating out of a city, whether that means stockpiling where you are, increasing your resilience, becoming a calm island in a storm, just like I advised in 2020. Not to be running around like a chicken with your head cut off, raiding the toilet paper aisle, but to just be chill. As chill as you possibly can. And chillness requires preparation. And I sincerely hope you take me seriously. There's no downside to taking me seriously. You will better your life. The things that you can stockpile or stock up on or the preparation that you can do will make your life better and won't cost you anything extra. You'll just eat your supplies. You'll just live your life. If somehow tomorrow morning rays of sunshine shine down from the earth and we all of a sudden have record harvests, the war is over, somehow all the oil comes back online magically, because it would take magic at this point, you would be no worse off. I'm telling you, there's bad times coming. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one.